Hello, everyone, and welcome again to another episode of What the Hell? And, you know, this episode is particularly exciting to me because around here where I work, which is KTTV, Fox 11 in Los Angeles, a very special day is Wednesday. And why is that? Because for 25 years, we've had a feature called Wednesday's Child. It's fronted by Christine Devine, our 10 p.m. anchor, and she is a delight, not to mention a divine. Here we go.
Hi, I'm Christine Devine of Fox 11 News, and I do the weekly Wednesday's Child segment every Wednesday, helping kids in foster care find permanent homes.
And I'm Will Wong with the Los Angeles County Department of Children and Family Services and the Wednesday's Child Program Coordinator.
I'm Gavin Glenn, and I'm a Wednesday's Child adoptive parent.
And you have?
5 children.
All adopted?
Yes.
Wow.
Fonda? I'm Fonda Sandoval. I'm also an adoptive parent through Sunday's Child, Wednesday's Child's precursor.
The early days.
And also a social worker.
Was there Sunday's Child before Wednesday's Child?
It started as Sunday's Child, and then we joined a partnership with 5 other cities under the Freddie Mac Foundation. We became Wednesday's Child. They're no longer in the program, but we kept it, and it's been 25 years.
Yeah. When I was in Dallas, I grew up, I think it was Tuesday's Child there. I think it was Tuesday's Child.
Yeah, there are segments across the country that do something like this. I like to say with my coordinator, Will Wong, that we made it bigger and better.
Bigger and better, no doubt, and for sure. And Will, you've helped, about 500 kids, give or take?
Close to it. 455 adoptions to date and about 70 or so pending.
And so what does that say to you?
That says that the program has accomplished this mission or is accomplishing this mission and objective. And the way that Christine and I run the program is to focus intentionally on children who have experienced greater barriers in terms of finding adoptive families.
To me, it sounds monumental to have about 500 kids adopted, but really there are thousands of kids out there.
There are. And, this does not culminate by any means all the adoptions that occur, in the county. What's significant with this number, again, is the societal barriers that these specific kids have to overcome in order to find an adopted family.
What are those societal barriers?
I would say misperceptions about who they are. Sometimes I think that people unintentionally places responsibility on the kids for their own plight when they are, in fact, victims of abuse and neglect that are in the system, and they're in the system due to no volition of their own.
How hard can it be, and maybe Christine wants to weigh in on this, but how hard can it be to connect family A and child B? And how easy can it be to connect family A and child B before we go to any of the parents?
Yeah, I think to follow up with what Will is talking about, you got to keep in mind, not everybody's looking for an instant 15-year-old or an 18-year-old. I had one family that they didn't want diapers, so they chose an 8-year-old versus a toddler. So it's really what you're looking for. And sometimes children have siblings, and not everybody's ready for 5 kids instantly.
How hard can it be, though, to connect these people? In other words, you might have a child that's been through a lot of trauma, doesn't really want to go to that house.
In this day and age, what I love about my coordinator, Dr. Will Wong, is that he's an advocate for the child's needs. It's not what the parent's looking for. It's what the child needs. So I love that in this day and age, there's much more awareness about, finding a home that's going to fit and work for the child.
And how hard can that be? I mean, you talk about children that have had a trail of perhaps abuse in their lives, and they may want to have a family, but they're hesitant or reticent to want to get engaged with strangers.
I think that part of that hesitation is kind of the overarching practice in the system, that a lot of decisions are already made for the kids by the social workers and by the courts. When we involve children in the decision-making capacity about what they want to even do for their Wednesday's Child segment, that gives them a sense of empowerment and advocacy for themselves. So then we're in essence allowing them or providing a conduit for them to tell other people, this is what I want in the family.
So in other words, the television feature, Wednesday's Child, adds another layer of confidence, so to speak?
I would say intentionally communicating to the child that what they want matters. And much of it, what happens in the system is our decisions made for the child without very much input oftentimes, unfortunately.
Now, we do have a couple of families here. We have a couple of parents. And let's see, you have five?
Yes, sir.
And so it's Glenn, right?
Yeah.
And so five adopted.
Gavin Glenn.
Gavin, I'm sorry. Yeah. It has five adopted children.
Yes, sir.
And so talk to me about that. How did that happen?
Actually, I got the first child first. We were looking at adoption, and our neighbors had adopted. And so when I came back, I was working for Disney, and I came back from Thailand. And I said, you know, let's do this. And we happened to see our son, Ibi, on Wednesday's Child Program, that he was up for, you know, a spotlight. And you know instantly when that child's on that show that there's a story, you know, a special story, and that, you know, this kid is just looking for a forever home. And he was just so adorable. I mean, I hate to say that in the way, like, that's why we chose him, but I just saw him. He looked so cute and riding the ponies and riding around the little rides and his head, and he was smiling, and, you know, it was just...
Can I just jump in on this? Because we should also note that EB had some special needs, and you also saw that as well.
Yes, and I remember just thinking, oh, okay, next. And it didn't stop, you know, from that. And it turns out that, you know, he was born in unfortunate situations. He was born in Detroit and in Eli Broad's Hospital. And he was brought out to Long Beach by his birth mother, and then he was failing to thrive. At 11 months, he weighed 11 pounds, so they put him into foster care. And then around 5 or 6, that wasn't going to work out, so he was going to be a high-risk placement. And thank God Wednesday Child found him. And so I understood what you were saying about adding a layer of confidence, but it's also creating... A greater chance of being adopted.
And this is something that Christine and I have talked about before, the idea that the platform of television puts that out there in front of more eyeballs.
Right.
And so more people potentially can have a chance to say, you know, that child, I'd like to learn more about that child.
Mm-hmm.
And you should see EB now. I mean, he's got this big, broad smile with these gorgeous teeth. He's stunning and wonderful.
25. He's the same age as Wednesday's child.
Yeah, well, how about 25? And so he was introduced to you, Christine, at what age?
Was he 5 or 6?
I'm assuming 6. I don't know how long he was in the program.
19 years. Mm-hmm. 19 years.
And we used to have reunions, so we would see him growing up with his family because now he has 4 siblings.
Right.
Yeah.
And so, Fonda, what about you?
Yes. So regarding my son that was on Sunday's Child, he was my second adoption. What drew me to him actually was that I saw within the video, I had actually met him at an event, and then I watched his Sunday's Child segment. And what I saw was that he was, you know, he had kind of shut down who his true self was, and I was drawn to his true self. He seemed to have a lot of energy that somebody had given him feedback that that's not okay. And so he had kind of emotionally shut down and tried to behave in the ways that everybody expected him to behave. And I was drawn to who he truly is. And what I really love is he's a father now, and he had grown up saying, I'm not going to have any children. I don't have any DNA that's worth bringing into the world, with a lot of negative perceptions, not just about his birth parents, but about himself. And I like to see that he grew in such a way that he realized that he does have value in the world and has value to pass along, and to see him as a father and to come full circle from being fearful of that role and now just embracing it is just wonderful to watch.
Sounds like there's incredible gratification.
Yes.
Absolutely.
And so, now do I understand correctly, you don't have to be married to have a foster child, right, or to have a adopted child?
Correct.
No.
And you can be single.
Yes.
And you have to meet the criteria.
And you can be gay.
And you can be gay, and that's the case in your family?
I hope so.
Well, no, I'm just trying to understand a little
yes.
bit. Yeah.
Yes.
Good answer, though.
That's part of the story, though, that you want to tell, too.
Right. Yeah. And you know, my partner and I, we had adopted, and then, you know, we, you know, gay people can be just as stupid as straight people. And you think, oh, a child's going to change this and change the marriage and change things. And we went through and we realized that it wasn't. And so we parted ways. But they've always maintained, you know, a positive relationship. In fact, his first 2 years of college, he lived with his other dad. And that's no issue at all whatsoever.
So basically, you go through real life things like any family.
Right.
Right?
Exactly.
Well, they are any family.
Right.
They
right.
are any family. It's just, you know, it's just not what we consider to be the traditional man, woman, child.
Right.
But the love and the emotion and the heart is all there nonetheless.
Yes. You have to right away realize that you can never compete with the birth parent. It's like competing with a ghost. And you can never say anything negative about the birth parents whatsoever, because that's what brought you joy in the world, but that's what brought them into the world. And so begrudging the parents would be begrudging the child.
You sound like a very happy dad.
Oh, yes. I'm glad you hear that.
And one of his daughters, adoptive daughters, also works for Children's Services now. I mean, This is a dad who made it work. He's really connected with EB and the children. And I'm just so proud of this family and the man that Gavin is and what he's brought to the table here when it comes to foster care.
What is the age range of your children?
Now, I remember when they were first, there were 6, 12, 13, and the twins were 15. And now they're 25, 30. I can't say my other daughter's age, and the twins are 33.
Yeah, well, there you go. You know, I have twins also.
Oh,
so,
wow.
Yeah, so I can tell you, I know that's a handful sometimes, especially when they're itty-bitty little guys. So you adopted a child named Carlos.
Yes.
And that was the first child.
No, he was my second adoption.
He was your second. The first one was?
The first one is Aaron, and Aaron is now 35. Then I adopted Carlos, who's now 37, and then I adopted Shauna when she was 17, who's now 38. Now, that's opposite of how people typically do it, but if you ever met Aaron, you knew no one was coming in behind him.
It's amazing. I mean, you look so young. How do you have such old kids?
That's what, you know, it's not the old kids that bother me. I have a granddaughter that turns 13 this weekend, and that hurts. And I love her, but when I have to, you know, when I coach her in a lot of sports and people think I'm her mom and I'm like, no, I'm her grandmother. It's just kind of difficult because then you get those sideways glances and then I have to admit my age because chronologically, these can be my children. Biologically, I would have been in college, but they, you know, I could have given birth to these kids and still be where I'm at. And then people start asking my age, which I wouldn't have to be asked if I didn't have a 13-year-old granddaughter.
Right.
So, you know, that part of me. And I'm a single parent, and my mom likes to joke that my kids helped keep me that way. But, you know, I can put up with kids telling me what to do, but that's about it. So I've remained a single parent and single grandparent.
Well, when you hear about children and grandchildren, and you know that you had something to do to facilitate that, what does that do to you?
I think that is also validating for me. And just as much as we like to bring a lot of validation to, you know, our children and families, it makes the work worthwhile, and it brings me a lot of joy personally and satisfaction to see the families grow and thrive. And especially this couple of weeks ago at the Board of Supervisors, you know, seeing and Fonda, I have to say that, you know, she's not just a social worker; she's also my colleague at the Department of Children and Family Services, and just to see her as a grandmother. I know I rib you a little bit on calling you grandma and everything, but it really is something that is you know, heartfelt in a way that I exude admiration to what you have done.
Thank you.
Grandma.
Yes.
What do they call you?
They call me Abby. Because I was grappling with it as they were growing up.
As an abuelita.
As an abuelita, yes.
You know, one thing if we could touch on for a second is, you know, sometimes social workers, there can be a stigma about social workers and DCFS. I love Fonda. She is nicknamed lovingly the teen whisperer. But you say you learned from adoption yourself how to be a better social worker.
Absolutely.
By knowing these kids in your home.
Absolutely, absolutely. I mean, you know, I meet with my kids on my caseload and I intersect in their lives. I come in and I come out, but as I adopted my children, but not mainly, but I learned the most probably from Carlos because he was the most guarded. He had had the most negative experiences in care. And I just learned that how to do my job with teenagers, because when he came into my life, he was 14, and that's a population that I've now become proficient with. And there was a point in raising him where I joked that I'd go home and do social work, and then eventually I was mom, but with him, there was a lot of therapeutic support that he was unwilling to go to counseling, but I was kind of filling those shoes. And my favorite, got a lot of favorite Carlos stories, but when he was 19 for Mother's Day, prior to that, he was calling me Fonda. And on that Mother's Day, he said, "I'm going to call you Mom now," and has never called me Fonda since.
He told me that you were the first person he trusted.
And he was 14. That's the crushing part. Go through 14 years of life and not trust anybody. And he didn't trust me at 14. I think he trusted me when he moved back home at 22, that I really was never going to turn my back on
him. And I think that's a very important thing to touch on, trust. Because trust is not necessarily guaranteed. It's earned. And you got to get to know somebody before you can trust them.
Absolutely. But also, unfortunately, you have to undo the distrust, right? So with all three of my children had two families prior commit to them and say they would be their adoptive parent, their forever family. So by the time I came along, forget it. Aaron doesn't like this part of the story. The only benefit I had that Aaron was probably my most challenging child behaviorally, right? And he was the youngest, and he was the one with me the longest. And so I remember Carlos kind of looking at him like, well, he's still here, so I think I'll make it. Because he really test drove me for a number of years. I put him in a school, I called it studying abroad, when he was in high school to save his life. And so I think Carlos being older and seeing that this young man had been there 3 more years, there was a little more trust just by virtue of, well, I've never done anything like that and he's still here, so I think I'm golden. But I had to undo the distrust from other people that made promises.
What would you tell people that would like to adopt, but maybe they're a little uncomfortable, a little hesitant, or don't really understand what's involved?
So first of all, the hardest part is putting up with our agency. You know, you're not used to having to answer to anybody as far as being a parent goes. But the kids, they're kids. I mean, people ask me, well, I hear about these terrible behaviors. Any of us don't look good on paper, but you meet us and then you're like, oh, there's these other elements. And that's, I think, why I have that title, The Teen Whisperer, is because I approach the kids as whole children. I do read the case, but I don't take it with me when I meet them. I meet them where they're at, and I kind of get a sense of who they are versus what everybody else is telling me they are on paper.
So let me have all of you do this. Somebody's driving right now. They're on the freeway. They're listening. Be careful on the road, okay? And what would you give them as advice if they're thinking seriously about wanting to adopt a child? Let's start with Fonda. Let's work around the
table.
Go ahead, Gavin.
I would highly recommend seeing the movie Instant Family. And I belong to a gay father support group called Pop Luck.
Pop Luck?
Yes.
Oh, I like that name.
And the president, John Ireland, invited me to the screening at Paramount. And we went. And I was so in love with the movie because it showed both sides. And a lot of times you don't want to bring up any of the negativity. You don't want to discourage anybody from being a parent because it's just like anything else, parenting, right? But you know that they've never been a parent and they could freak them out. So that's the thing. You're kind of like stepping on eggshells. But I am a speaker at Pop Luck, and I do exactly as you asked the question, you know, and you say, or like Christine said earlier, you know, maybe you start out with a 14-year-old, you know, if the whole idea of babies and diapers and bottles intimidates you, you know. There's something for everyone, you know.
I got to tell you, you know, because you have twins and I have twins. When the twins came along, I had already had one child. And we learned about a support group called Mothers of Multiples, also known as Mothers of Twins. But they do triplets and quadruplets and all of that sort of thing. And these are parents that have gone through this experience and can help others with it. I thought having two babies was like having two babies. What I didn't realize was it's like everything is exponential. So you get two car seats for your car, two car seats for mom's car, two car seats for this grandma and grandpa, two car seats for that grandma. All of a sudden, you don't have any money left.
Right.
So you know, when you deal with support groups, it's remarkable how much that can help you and how much it helped us when we had twins. So I can imagine what Pop Luck does to try to help people.
Well, when I found out that I took the four kids at 10 o'clock at night, the next day, IKEA was there with beds.
Oh.
And
wow.
Pop Luck parents all came. It was like a fire brigade, and the doorbell was ringing all day, and everybody just kept bringing things. And I do want to give a shout out for the Jewish Women Council. They were there. They had me walk through and say, you're going to need a kitchen table. You're going to need this. You're going to need this. And they were telling me. And I was really awkward because I just grew up very working class Irish. You just don't accept charity. And I was walking through, and it was so, this woman was so nice. You're going to need this. You're going to need that. Oh, don't worry about it.
You know, I can hear it now.
Right.
You're going to need this, and you're going to need that.
I'd like Will to touch on what kind of assistance comes with children that are in foster care, because it used to be where foster families got financial assistance, but now it also comes with adoptive families. And that's a great help because, you know, kids need soccer shoes for soccer practice. Will?
Right.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that one of the things that are reversed for adoptive parents initially is that, wait a minute, you're actually going to pay us to, you know, take care of this child. And had I birthed this child on my own, no one's going to provide this kind of assistance. But again, you know, we kind of look at it as the entitlement for the child, kind of like, you know, reparations for them being in the system due to no volition of their own. So there is the same rate that would have been paid to a foster parent would be paid to an adoptive, you know, parent to help. Not necessarily, you know, to just sustain the child, but perhaps maybe this can be, again, like you said, put into music lessons, or maybe put away in the college fund.
Braces
are expensive, yeah. As I understand it.
Well, you know, we were on one particular train of thought. We kind of got off on a side trail. But the idea of if somebody's listening to us right now and they're thinking about a child and they'd like to have a child and they'd like to adopt a child or take in a foster child, what do you tell them? You're with DCFS, Department of Children and Family Services.
I think for me, I think my lens, and I have to bring in my personal lens as a social worker, you know, on this, is that, you know, wanting to be a hero and feeling good about what you do is absolutely valid. But what we really would like to see is, you know, the person wanting to be a parent first and meeting the child's needs. So I think that's one of the implicit messages that we try to send on Wednesday's Child by inviting the child to be kind of a co-constructor in terms of what they want in the family, expressing what it is on camera, what it is that they have in terms of requirement for a family.
In your way of thinking, how successful, we kind of touched on this earlier, but how successful has that platform been?
I think successful enough with 455 adoptions, with especially with kids who you know, face more barriers in terms of finding adoptive families. I think that you know, Christine and I have had conversations over the years about, you know, even with some of the Wednesday Child kids that have not found adoptive homes through the program but have exited the system, you know, come back and said, express positive experiences with the Wednesday Child. And I think one of the things is that we've been able to also communicate to the child that they matter, and telling them that they can. I think that there are so many things that happen in society that, you know, silently conveys messages to kids in foster care that they cannot. And I like to think that we instill that even if they don't find an adoptive family through us.
Well, you know, Wednesday's Child is a project of Fox 11 here in Los Angeles. And Christine, the face of it for 25 years, and that face looks like 24. And,
right.
You know, it has been a significant project. I have said to Christine how amazed I am and how much I admire her for her dedication to it. And I know she doesn't like to take that kind of...
Because there's
humble.
A team.
There's a team.
There's a team.
I know there's a team, and there's a team for everything. But you know what? 25 years is a lot of backbone.
You know, I really credit Fox 11 for sticking with this program for 25 years, through the thick, through the thin. I mean, that says a lot. I mean, how many stations can say they've had any program on for 25 years? But it really is the photographers, the editors, the assignment desk. It's the writers. It's the DCFS. I mean, like the social workers. Fonda, as a social worker, has to go pick up the child, bring them to the shoot. Will creates these dream day shoots tailored for the child. If you like basketball, well, maybe we'll go to basketball practice with Kobe Bryant.
Or if you like the Goodyear blimp, maybe you go up in the blimp, which you've done.
And we have... Yeah, we've done all that.
Yeah, no.
Actually, that was a wild ride, let me tell you.
Yeah, was it?
Yeah.
Well, what was wild about it?
It's wavy, like you're riding a wave.
Right.
So it's like, woo.
Well, I was in it this week. Woo. I was in it this week because I didn't get to go up, but we were in it, in the gondola, and the wind was just blowing that thing around, and I could only imagine what it would be like up in the air.
Okay, so tell me if that kid is going to ever forget that experience.
Right. No, never forget
it.
Never forget it. And that's great because you're giving them memorable moments.
And the child oftentimes tells me what it is that they want to do. So they create their own therapeutic environment for them to tell their story, and then we have the opportunity, as I said, to tell their complete story.
Did any of them ever come up with a story you couldn't fulfill?
They
wanted to be on the top of a mountain in Switzerland or something?
well, no one's brought that up.
Thanks for the idea.
Yeah. But, we're going to have to figure out how to pull this off. So thanks, Hal.
Yeah, sure.
But what I've really noticed also is how amazing our community is in terms of reaching out. I think that one of the things that the Wednesday's Child program has done has been connecting us, you know, the agency, with the communities and inviting them to participate, to be a part of constructing this environment, this village, as it were, to, you know, raise our children. I think that people want to give, people want to participate. They don't always know how, and sometimes they feel like they need permission. So the Wednesday's Child program has, you know, really reined in, you know, all of these resources. One of the biggest shoots that we've done, at least I think it was a big thing. We had a teenager that wanted to become a sheriff's department medic, and I was thinking just simply working with the sheriff's department, a local station, maybe their search and rescue. Next thing I know, they're flying in Air 5, and only to find out that it costs $17,000 an hour to fly that helicopter, but they did it for us.
Nice.
And it really made this child feel like he mattered.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, that's very moving. That's very touching.
It's stuff that we can't even pay for, not even Fox 11, I think, or $17,000. Well,
that's how much I pay them to work here.
Okay. I just did a follow-up with a girl who was on in the 1990s. She had kept her Sunday's Child segment from all of those years. It was all grainy from a VHS tape. She had kept it all these years. She's married now with her own kids, and she still has that segment.
Oh, it means something. It means something. All right, so let's do a kind of a final thought here and go around the table. We'll start with Fonda, and we'll go to Gavin, Will, and then we'll end up with Christine. Go ahead.
So there's a couple things I just want to say quickly. Is as you embark upon being an adoptive parent, look for gratitude from children in different ways than thank you and I love you. We touched upon this earlier. And the other thing is that you've got to have a sense of humor about yourself. And not about the kids, but about yourself when it comes to parenting children who come in with their own temperament, their own personality, and are learning how to live with you because you're part of it too.
All right, Gavin.
Being a parent is it levels the playing field. I just coincidentally happened to adopt my children from the same agency as Mayor Eric Garcetti. And long story short, we ended up in the West Hollywood parade. And we were talking about parenting, and I just talk about how parenting is such a humbling thing. Here he is, the mayor of a major, you know, metropolitan city, and right now he's just a person talking about his kids and adoption. And how's your kid? Oh, he's doing good. What are you doing? Oh, yeah, and checking in with them. So it's just for those who want to adopt, it just, as Sandra Bullock says in her movie Blind Side, she goes, "No, I'm the lucky one," and it's so true.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Well, you know, there's something about being a parent. That's special, rewarding, frustrating, anxiety-provoking, a little bit of everything. And someday somebody, hopefully me, is going to write a book about parenting for dummies because I feel like I could have used one. So, Will?
Well, I think that in regards to all of this, you know, you know, the needs of children, you know, historically, you know, have always remained constant. You know, the agendas of agencies have always kind of answered the swing of the pendulum. But children always need a safe and permanent family. Mm. And that's never going to change. And I see Wednesday's Child, you know, as we depart, you know, as kind of like the safety net within the agency. We focus our attention on the children that are overlooked in the system. I hope that at the end of the day, that the majority of Kansas City, that we did the best we could for them and that we did a pretty good job.
Christine.
Well, as you know, my own parents were foster and adoptive parents, so I do personally know the journey well, having witnessed, you know, siblings like that in my own home. I think the greatest thing about Wednesday's Child after 25 years is not just the adoption, is that we really have worked very hard to erase the stigma of children in the system, mm-hmm. children in foster care, by showing them laughing and smiling with hopes and dreams and career ideas. And I think that spills over beyond the children that are on our segment to all kids in foster care. I had two young men who are mentors now to others in foster care who told me we were the first time they'd seen anything positive on kids in foster care on TV. Mm-hmm. And that says a lot.
And that's, mm-hmm. that's the complete picture that we, you know, convey, you know, against the backdrop of all of the assumptions. Some of them might be true, but there's so much more to our children and so much more that people don't get to see or sometimes unwilling to see. And, you know, doing this job, we get to, you know, present them in the best possible light. But I do also want to, you know, add that in regards to adoption and in regards to inviting the community to make a difference in a child's life, it doesn't have to be about adoption. If people aren't ready for adoption at this point or still kind of, you know, maybe thinking and easing their way into this kind of a thing, there are other opportunities in which to, you know, contribute to, you know, the well-being and growth and the thriving of a child.
Let me add to that. It's Christmas coming up. You can donate to a foster care agency so kids get some Christmas gifts.
Or you may hear this after Christmas, and if you do, next Christmas, you can do that.
Oh, and can I add this? Yeah, you know, just a phone number to call, you know, whether it be about adoption information or maybe about an opportunity how to contribute or how to mentor a child if you're not ready for adoption. Please give our assistant, our Wednesday Child assistant, a call. She sits 30 feet away from me. And that number is the same one that you would, you know, see on Fox 11. It's 866-921-ADOPT. And that's 866-921-2367. And that's the Wednesday Child Hotline. We'll be happy to connect you to any sort of resources in which to help a child.
The only thing that would be absolutely mind-boggling would be if you told me that the Wednesday's Child Assistant was named Tuesday.
She could have
maybe tomorrow.
We'll talk about a name change.
All right. Well, happy 25th anniversary to Wednesday's Child, and I hope all of you will come back for the 50th anniversary of Wednesday's Child.
And Christine will look the same.
Well, Will Wong is already a professor at Cal State LA, grooming the next generation of social workers. So we'll see who'll be sitting here and take over the mantle. Wow.
Well, thanks again to Christine and to all of our guests. And if you haven't subscribed, please do. And we'll see you next time.